D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. We are live at Bridgestone Arena. Lightning versus Predators tonight, 6:45 p.m. Puck drop, not 7 o'clock. 6:45 p.m. puck drop, 5:45 pregame, right here on 102.5 The Game. Before we switch gears to Vanderbilt, which is preparing to take on Texas this weekend, let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's first welcome in Dan. Dan, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to quickly just put in my two cents on the whole Jeff Simmons situation and his contract and what, you know, what kind of yield you might be able to get from him. But I don't think it is practical to try to get rid of one of your stalwarts when looking forward. Yeah, sure, you can get a nice little haul, but when you have the absolute most cap space in 2026, what does that really get you? Just more money to buy new players with, potentially. And obviously, draft picks moving forward, but if we're gonna be able to keep Cam Ward upright and not turn him into the next David Carr or Joe Burrow, where they're going to just get run into the ground, you have to put more money and more resources into that offensive end. So many teams that have great defensive ends: Trey Hendrickson, Max Crosby, you know, Micah Parsons. These are not Super Bowl teams that when they were, or with Micah, when he was with the Cowboys before. Super Bowl contenders, they're fantastic edge rushers, but what the need are coverage.
Thank you for the call, Dan. Unfortunately, you were breaking up.
I see his point, but mm-hmm. what I have, that cap space, a lot of it should be utilized to, I think we can say, at least Peter Skoronski is on the path of a guy that you're going to reinvest in and pay for the second contract. So that's where some of that space goes. That's where a lean team that's good is using the cap dollars. Not, hey, we've got a lot of cap space to go spend on free agents who are overpaid and older mm-hmm. and in a new spot where you're not sure you're going to get a great return on investment. That is a lesson they should have learned 2 years ago. So that's the draft picks that you draft and develop, that's where you eventually are going to spend the cap space. Like who did Floyd Reese? When the Titans had their great teams, one by one, he was signing the next contract to Eddie George, the next contract to Steve McNair, the next contract to Blaine Bishop. That core was all guys that became more expensive. That's where all the cap dollars went. And then there maybe just be one more guy that he had enough money to go get, like a Randall Godfrey or, you know, somebody to add, a Fred Miller, to try to keep it going. But that's how you build a good team. It's with homegrown guys you reinvest in.
Let's go to Mike on our phone line. Mike, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yep. How you doing, guys?
Good, thank you.
Yep. We've, you know, been doing a lot of blaming for the Titans failures here and there. You know, she's responsible, Amy, coaches, players, Cam, blah, blah. It goes around the horn. My question is, has anybody asked, who is the scouting staff? Because they're the ones that bring in the players to be reviewed and then either hired or not hired or whatever. Over the last 3-4 years, maybe some of the blame should be put there at the scouting staff level. And then who are they responsible to? How many of them are there? How long have they been with the Titans? And who are they? I mean, I really believe that if the blame's going to be put around, shouldn't we look at the scouting staff?
Thank you for the call.
I mean, because ultimately I think it all works hand in hand because, you know, whether it's the supreme ruler of football or the actual GM, they're telling, hey, listen, these are the type of players we are looking for. Everybody should be on the same page, and I'm sure everybody's on the same page. I'm sure some guys have been there for a while. I don't know how many people Borgonzi brought in, you know, with him. I don't know how many people Brinker decided. I know Rand didn't want to bring anyone in. I think he brought one person in. But outside of that, I don't think he changed the scouting staff much if any. But yes, you know, eventually you have to, you know, look at the scouting. And are they getting the players that you are asking for? And if they are, then why aren't you able to develop them? Or they're not getting the guys that, or they're not evaluating them to a point to where, oh, these guys are good for our team. That's the tricky part because, you know, these are some, you know, these guys are faceless and a lot of them are nameless and they go out and they do their job and they're on the road all the time. So it's a hard job. But everybody's at fault in this. But I'm not going to put no more fault on the scouts than I do on the players or the GM. Actually, I'm going to put more fault on the GM and the coach and the supreme ruler of football than the scouts. Because ultimately, these are the guys you're asking them to go out and get. And they are bringing back to you the guys that you are asking for. And ultimately what? You have to decide which one of these guys you go after in the draft or in free agency. So, yeah, we can lump the scouts in there, but I'm not pointing at them and saying, oh, they the problem. No, because eventually they are going out to get the players you want. The attitudes are you that fits the organization. Now it's you are tasked to, out of all these people, try to get the guys you want, and then once you get them, develop them. And what have they not been able to do? Develop draft picks.
Isn't that part of the draft, develop, retain mantra? That's a big part of it.
Yeah, it is.
Developing.
But you hope that now that Borgonzi is here, that's why I say let him control everything. Now that he's here, he's been around an organization that has done it year after year after year with a head coach that's one of the greatest head coaches of all time. So he's done it with a program and a system like that. Let him do it here. Don't mess with him. Let him look at the players and decide, hey, I think he's good. Now let's have a conversation about him.
Let's switch gears here. Vanderbilt taking on Texas this Saturday morning, 11 a.m. kickoff on ABC.
Ooh,
of course,
early.
You can hear the game right here on 102.5 The Game. Texas, at the moment, favored by 1.5. The 20th-ranked Longhorns versus the 9th-ranked Vanderbilt Commodores. Willie Donick gets all the warm and fuzzies, excuse me.
Just one number there.
Just one number. That's true.
Nine.
Nine times.
And the way the life goes in the SEC, you could have no number.
Here today,
next to your name,
gone tomorrow.
In 4 weeks.
Yeah, like,
that's
exactly.
Ask Brian Kelly.
Exactly. I was just going there.
Ask
you went from
Brian
number
Kelly.
Four. To fired
and one
in
month.
Four
Franklin.
Weeks.
Yeah. Same thing with Franklin.
Yeah. Number one.
Exactly.
And in double overtime against Oregon, this close to a great comeback win. A couple weeks later, you're gone.
Out of here, buddy.
So as I was doing a lot of reading after Vanderbilt's win against Missouri over the weekend, I stumbled across this column written by Matt Hayes of USA Today with the headline, SEC downplayed Indiana and 2024 playoff race, now Vanderbilt is Indiana. Matt Hayes writes, quote, a year after whining and moaning about Indiana's viability in the college football playoff race, after spending the entire offseason badgering the CFP selection committee into focusing more on strength of schedule, the SEC now has its own one-loss, historically lovable loser trying to crash the joint without a resume to show for it. Vanderbilt, meet Indiana 2024, and never the twain shall be compared if the SEC has anything to do with it. Hayes continues later. Indiana won 11 games and beat one team with a winning record in 2024, yet was awarded one of the 7 precious at-large CFP spots. Vanderbilt, if it finishes the regular season with an 11-1 record, will have beaten maybe one ranked team, depending on how the seasons at LSU and Tennessee unfold. You better believe the narrative from the SEC is going to be wins, 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 when last year with Indiana, it was some good losses are better than wins. And here was the first thing I thought when I read that column from Matt Hayes of USA Today. Indiana last season played one ranked opponent in the regular season. They played then number 2 Ohio State in Columbus, and Indiana was throttled 38-15. Vanderbilt is 3-1 versus ranked opponents this season at the time of the matchup. They beat South Carolina on the road. They lost to Alabama on the road. They beat LSU, and they beat Missouri. So here's the thing that I was thinking about. How much stock should we put into the rankings of opponents at the time of the matchup versus the overall quality of the opponent? So, for example, South Carolina is 3-5. South Carolina has not lived up to the billing. But South Carolina was ranked 11th in the country at the time Vanderbilt beat them on the road. So how much should that matter versus, well, South Carolina was number 11, but they're 3-5, so that win isn't as impressive as it was back then. It feels like a lot of hindsight. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Willie?
I think this is why you have a committee of human beings and not just spitting numbers out of rankings. Because I think we've come to understand over time that the rankings are just window dressing, right? It's just how voters vote each week. It's kind of a, what have you done for me lately? Who's hot? You know, there's still a traditional thing, ex-voter sitting at his desk. So-and-so was number 11 last week. Well, they won last week. Do they move past anybody? Well, who did they play? Well, yeah, I'll put them at number 10 this week. There's still that. Mm-hmm. When it's a lot, when you're trying to select for the playoffs, it's got to be more NCAA basketball selection committee, where you're looking at a lot of things and not just who was ranked when. In my mind, there is absolutely no comparison to the strength of schedule Indiana played last year, and the strength of schedule Vanderbilt played this year. It's not even close. It's not in the same as Samuel L. Jackson says in Pulp Fiction. It's not in the same ballpark. It's not in the same stadium. I mean, I think he was talking about a foot massage there.
Yeah.
I'll leave the rest to you. See the movie. You'll see the context. But look, South Carolina, great example. You think Alabama thinks South Carolina was a quality win? South Carolina last year took Alabama right to the wire. This year, took them right to the wire again. Vanderbilt went in there and waxed South Carolina. Is Alabama a good team? Mm-hmm. They're a really good team. South Carolina, don't tell me what their record is. In this league, they are a tough out. And they're, what, 12th or 13th in the SEC? It's the league's strength. So we're in a whole new ball game, I think, of saying, well, so-and-so was ranked, and now they've lost some games, so that's not a good win anymore. I see the point, because South Carolina isn't the 11th best team in the country, but they're still a very, very good team, especially playing on their field. So, for example, last year, I'm looking at Indiana's schedule. When they beat Purdue 66-0 at home, that's an unranked team. You're telling me that all games against unranked teams are the same? Like, it's not about how many ranked teams you played. It's context. It's looking. It's human people looking and saying, how tough was that game to win? Virginia Tech, I would say at the time, in the atmosphere they played in, Virginia Tech's fired their coach. They're not having a good year. But at the time they played them, I think there's value to that win. That wasn't an easy place to play. I think all of these things are things to consider. And I do think at the end of last year, Indiana's resume looked thin. They did not play Penn State. They did not play Oregon. They played some of the bottom feeders in the league, and they, to their credit, they whipped them. But it was a thin resume compared to the week-in, week-out challenge that you have in the SEC. The depth of the SEC is a different thing than the depth of the Big Ten.
Garrett from Clarksville on our text line says, I think that's why it's also important how they won or lost to those teams.
How who won or lost to those teams?
Just whichever individual team we're discussing.
This is a horse crap article. Not from a grammatical standpoint or how it's not.
There were no egregious spelling errors in this column, unlike Roger McCreary's farewell post.
I'm not saying that, you know.
No titty-ins in this column.
He didn't put, you know, the time into it. I'm not saying it because I couldn't have wrote it. Written it, excuse me. I say it's crap because he don't believe what he's saying. He don't. He don't believe what he's saying. Because there's no way on God's green earth that you can look at both of them and say, oh, there is a comparison. The only comparison is they're both college teams. They're both division, you know, Power 5 teams or Power mm-hmm. 4 now. Power 4 teams. That is the only comparison. At no point, and I'm a Big Ten guy, and I was pushing for Indiana to make it to the playoffs. My thing is they beat who they had in front of them except the number one team in the country. And nobody beat the number one team in the country. They won the national championship. Well, Michigan. No, they beat Michigan last year.
No, they did lose.
They lost to Michigan, yeah. That's why he was going to get fired if he didn't win the national yeah. championship. You're right.
That's right.
So the team, they beat everybody on their schedule. Everybody except Ohio State, okay?
And they lost by 23 points.
Exactly.
On the road, but lost by 23 points.
But he doesn't believe this because at no point did they play a ranked team outside of Ohio State. At no point, even at the beginning of the season, the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, they did not play a ranked opponent. They have no ranked opponent on their schedule last year except Ohio State.
Correct.
Okay? Contrast that to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt has played 4 top 15 teams, lost to one of them, and they should have won that game. I don't care what nobody says.
They lost to Alabama.
Yeah, they lost to Alabama. That game they should have won because there was not this big discrepancy between Alabama and
the final Vanderbilt. Score is misleading.
And the final score is grossly misleading because that was a tight game until that last where they just scored.
Mm-hmm.
So Vandy still had an opportunity to win, but he doesn't believe this article. He writes it because what happened?
We're talking about
it. Gets
about
a lot of pickup
yeah.
because it's the SEC versus the Big Ten.
I wonder
That's
if he
it
thought
is.
It was going to be more similar when he started doing it. I don't know. He
but
can't
he
look
could
himself.
Have.
This guy
yeah,
has
exactly.
been around for a long time. He's not a nobody.
There's no way you can
he's
look
got
at
it. He can't look himself in the mirror and compare
and
the two schedules and
no
say
way
one
he can
is
look
not
at
way
that
tougher.
And say this is the same situation because it's not. One team played a schedule that. It's their schedule, but it wasn't a tough schedule. Another team has already played 4 top 15 teams, 4 of them, and they're 3-1, and they got a few more to go.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt, which is preparing for Texas this weekend. I would love to get Trevor Maddich's opinion on this, and it's a good thing that Trevor Maddich is coming up next. 615-737-1025. Predators fans, I teased it. If you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Vancouver Canucks here at Bridgestone Arena next Monday, November 3rd. Be caller number 2 at 615-737-1025. A pair of tickets could be yours to see the Predators take on the Canucks at Bridgestone Arena this coming Monday, November 3rd, a 7:30 puck drop. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, I'm glad you're on. I want your opinion on something we were just discussing. There was a column in USA Today written by Matt Hayes over the weekend with the headline, SEC downplayed Indiana in 2024 playoff race. Now Vanderbilt is Indiana. I'll read you a portion of the column, and then I want your reaction. Matt Hayes writes, quote, "A year after whining and moaning about Indiana's viability in the college football playoff race, after spending the entire offseason badgering the CFP selection committee into focusing more on strength of schedule, the SEC now has its own one-loss, historically lovable loser trying to crash the joint without a resume to show for it. Vanderbilt, meet Indiana 2024. Do you see any comparisons between last year's Indiana team and this year's Vanderbilt team in terms of It's in terms of their resumes?
I see zero other than these are two teams that you have to rub your eyes a little bit and look close and say, are we talking about Indiana University? Are we talking about Vanderbilt University? Football? We're not talking about basketball. We're not talking about baseball. That's the only comparison. These are new people. Oh, I forgot we had Trevor on. What am I talking about?
Trevor, hello.
But you should have given like my teacher in the third grade. Willie, is your name Trevor? Trevor had his hand raised. Yeah. My bad, Trevor.
Trevor, please go ahead. Pardon Willie's rude interruption. Please go ahead.
So rude.
Live radio. Take two.
I was enjoying listening to Willie, though. Willie's got a lot of good points on this. I think it is a good point to compare Vandy this year to Indiana last year from that standpoint, because they didn't play a ranked team. Indiana didn't in the regular season, except for Ohio State. They annihilated everybody but Ohio State and got rather blown out and dominated by the Buckeyes. And then they showed that they weren't really competitive with Notre Dame in the playoff as well. And this year, they're better on both sides of the ball. So you look at Vandy. Vandy quietly has one of the best offenses in the SEC. They're second to Tennessee in scoring points per game. Defense is much improved. It's about average, but average is much better than they've been on defense. They've been pushed around on defense. So they've gotten better there. Defense really rose up against Missouri last week to keep Missouri out of the end zone and put Vandy in position to win that game at the end. But I think it's a fair comparison. Now, when you look at quality wins this year, right now, Vandy's got a win over Missouri. They were ranked when they played them. I haven't looked at it here recently. But Missouri, very, very good chance will finish ranked, which is something Indiana will not have had last year to have beaten a team in the regular season that finished ranked. So that's a good win. But either way, it's in some ways an interesting conversation that the rest of the schedule will take care of. Because they have to play at Texas this week, and then Auburn and Kentucky are not going to be easy games for them, and then they finish the season at Tennessee. And so if they are able to take care of business, and especially if they can, let's say they lose to Oklahoma, but they beat Tennessee, they'll be a 10-2 SEC team with wins over a probably ranked Missouri and over Tennessee, and that might get Vandy into the playoff at 10-2.
Trevor, just your early read on the matchup between Vanderbilt and Texas. Texas is favored at the moment by 1.5. I know that Arch Manning was in concussion protocol. I haven't seen an update today. It may be out there. I just haven't seen it. But your early read on the matchup on Saturday.
Yeah, early read is that this is good on good and struggle on, to some degree, struggle. The good on good is Vandy's offense against Texas's defense. Texas's defense has had its moments of head-scratching failures this year, but for the most part, they have lived up to their billing as one of the best defenses in the SEC. And Texas's offense has really struggled. And the biggest problem is not Arch at quarterback. The biggest problem is that they struggle to run the ball. Their offensive line has had to replace like four guys, I think, off of last year's team, including both tackles who were drafted into the NFL, one of them in the first round. And the guys that have come in to replace them have just not gelled. They've not come together. Plus some injuries at running back. And Texas as a running team has been, they've been weak. Let's put it that way. So Arch is having to carry the team. And I guess Mississippi State is a great example because they ran the ball weekly against Mississippi State, and Arch brought them back from 17 down to win that game. And, of course, he didn't throw the game-winning touchdown. That's when he got his concussion. And the backup, Matthew Caldwell, came in and threw a beautiful dime on a fade in the end zone for the game winner. But the point is that Arch has been playing better than people give him credit for because he's had to carry the team, just carry the team. And he's been able to do it in ugly fashion but mostly successful fashion. And so for Vanderbilt, you know, their offense is going to be in a tough position against the Texas defense. But remember Vandy's superpower. It's extending drives. It's converting third downs. They're second in the SEC and 10th in the nation at third down conversions, over 50%. And that's in part because Pavia is so good at making something happen on third and fourth down. And that plays keep away. It keeps the other offense off the field. And it extends drives for Vandy. And so, really, this game is going to come down to that because Texas still has enough great athletes to beat Vandy, especially in Austin. But Vandy has the superpower of keeping that Texas offense on the sideline, and that's what I'll be watching for early in the game. Is Pavia able to continue to convert those third downs and keep Arch Manning or whoever plays quarterback on the sideline?
Now, Trevor, I think Vandy does have one of the main ingredients, I think, that you need to win a championship. Not to say that they will, but I think they have one of the main ingredients or DNA. They are a team that can beat you either way. If you want to run the football, they can run the football, slow the game down, methodically move it down the field. We saw that against Missouri. I think they had like two or three series. It was the Missouri game or before that, the game before that, where they had 10-plus plays on three series, and they were able to capitalize on them each time. That was a few games ago. As I'm speaking, I'm remembering. That was a few games ago where they dominated time of possession and they were able to go 10-plus plays and still score. So they can beat you that way. But they also can beat you with a one strike like they did last week. Hit, you know, the running back run for 60-something yards for a touchdown. So they had the ingredient, I think. And they, like you said, their defense is getting better. They had the ingredient to say win big and consistently. It's just that the SEC is so tough every week. Presents its own and different dilemma as far as who you're playing. But I did want to ask you about the coaches. Coaches have already been fired. You know, top of the list is Brian Kelly, and obviously Franklin before that. But there is $167 million to be paid out for buyouts with all of these coaches, starting with Franklin, me and Kelly, and ending with Jay Norvell. I heard Mac Brown say something a few weeks ago about these buyouts and are they, you know, can this continue? And he thought maybe if you pay them more per year and make the buyout a little less, you will see teams moving away from coaches a lot faster. Do you think that's feasible to do?
I think it's feasible for the programs to want to do that.
Yes.
The problem is they've got to deal with the agents. And the agents are going to say, look, you want my guy to be your next coach. You want him to have a lower buyout. You're willing to give him more money now, but he actually doesn't want that. He wants to have a fair salary, and he wants a high buyout because he doesn't want to have happen to him what happened to some of these other coaches. And right now, Derek, it's such a microwave culture with college coaches. Because there are so many programs, and there are enough programs that make other programs look bad. For example, take a look at Texas A&M. So last year, Texas A&M and Coach Mike Elko's first season was not ranked. This year, Mike Elko's second season, right now they're ranked third in the nation. Take a look at Indiana. So Frank Cignetti's in his second year coaching. In his first year, last year, they made the playoff. This year, Cignetti's second year, as head coach, they're ranked second in the nation. And so if you are Penn State, you're looking there going, look, those guys can do it. They can do it quickly. We have all the resources everybody else has. Certainly we have all the resources that Indiana has, and yet we, under James Franklin, are not getting to that elite level. And what you end up having happen is the donors will say to the administration, look, we'll keep kicking in money for NIL, but it's being wasted right now with this guy as head coach. So if you keep him, we're going to close the checkbook until you replace him. You know, it used to be that you would donate $1 million. It would go towards a building. You'd have your name on the side of the building. And for the rest of your life, you could drive your grandkids by it and say, hey, see that plaque? That's our family. We helped build that. But now you pay $1 million for this year's quarterback. Doesn't work out. You pay $1 million for next year's quarterback. Doesn't work out. You keep doing it. And it didn't take long for the donors to say, hey, we want them out of here. And A&M, second year under a head coach, ranked third in the nation. Indiana, second year and a head coach, ranked second in the nation. Texas Tech, with one massive NIL infusion, went from being an also-ran to being one of the best teams in the Big 12 and certainly one of the better teams in the country. So Vanderbilt, for goodness sake, it took Clark Lee a little bit longer. I think this is, what, his fifth year or so? But he's got Vandy now at, top 10. So now you're LSU, and your three previous head coaches all won the national championship within their first 4 years. Ed Orgeron, Les Miles, Nick Saban. And now you've got the fourth year of Brian Kelly, And Kelly's team right now is nowhere near competing even for the SEC, much less national champion. And they're looking around the rest of the landscape of college football, and they're saying, okay, it can be done. It can be done quickly, especially here with our resources. But what it also says to the next coach is, you better win. You better win quickly, or you're gone, which brings us full circle to your point, Derek, which is a good one. They know that if they are very good, they're fired. They've got to be elite in order to not get fired. And so they're going to want to make sure that they've got guaranteed money out the door if they put themselves in that risky position.
It's a fascinating topic, and it's changing every week. We were just talking about how quick you go from being number one or number four to fired 5 weeks later. So there was a good discussion, Trevor, on game day on the Vanderbilt campus where the guys were kicking around. What does a coach do to try to protect himself or give himself a little bit more control on things that are getting harder and harder to control, like the NIL and where's your money coming from? Do you think it'll be something that people find out more about and get better at handling that part, or are we just getting started with the chaos?
Yeah, Willie, it's a good point, because you don't get to fight the battle you want. You have to fight the battle you're in. And this current regime of NIL, and you can transfer as much as you want, is unsustainable, and it will change as we get new laws coming down and new protocols being imposed on college football. But for now, this is what we got. And so head coaches need to not complain that their best players are being poached. They need to not complain that bringing in a bunch of transfers hurts chemistry and you have to get the chemistry. You need to be better at functioning at the highest level under those circumstances than the people you're competing with. And that really is where we are right now, because old school coaches are really struggling if they don't adapt very quickly to the new paradigm. So they're thinking, okay, here I am. We're going to build from within. We're going to develop freshmen. We're going to bring in a few transfers, Dabo Sweeney, to fix things, plug holes. But then we're going to take the time we need to do to develop the program and do it right. Well, maybe that will work if your donors are patient enough to kick in all these millions of dollars year after year after year and see no success while they look around the corner and they see other teams having success right now. And that's why the coaches need to just say, okay, I need to fight the battle I'm in. And the battle I'm in is I got to win right now. So how do I do it? And truthfully, if I'm any coach in college football, the first thing I do in the offseason is I drive to Bloomington, Indiana, and I ask Kurt Cignetti how he does it. Because it's not just bringing in players, it's also molding them into a cohesive team. And I would want to know how he does both.
Trevor Matich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Hey, thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We will react to what Trevor had to say. We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt and the landscape of college football. 615-737-1025. A reminder, Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock live here at Barrel House. 615-737-1025. D-Mace Vingan and Donick is presented to you by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think. With Bax Homeworks, get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us in roughly 15 minutes at the top of the hour as the Predators prepare to take on the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. Yet another reminder, 6:45 p.m. puck drop, 5:45 p.m. pregame. So we'll be leaving you just a little bit earlier than usual tonight, making way for Max Herz and Predators pregame. It's the NHL's frozen frenzy, so all 32 teams are in action, hence the unusual start time as the league is trying to stagger the start time. So there's never a down period in the hockey action tonight. So Predators versus the Lightning tonight at 6:45. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Bubba. Bubba, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to throw something out to the fans, the Titans fans.
Sure.
I hear a lot of talk about them not showing up for Sunday's game. And I'd like to say that, if you're a season ticket holder or have tickets for the game and you're not going to go, why don't you, you know, give them to, like, the Boys Club, Boys and Girls Club or the YMCA. There's a lot of kids, your churches, there's a lot of kids that would love to go to a game, maybe have never been to a Titans game. At least they can use them and have fun. I wish they would, you know, at least the Titans would publish that, or maybe you guys, you know, endorse that and maybe mention it during your broadcast during the week. But I just think if they're not going to go, you know, it's going to look bad enough as it is. But the kids could deserve to see a game if they can go. That's just my point.
Thank you for the call, Bubba.
I think that's a good idea. I'm sure the Titans, you know, do what they can as far as giving away tickets to Boys and Girls Club. You know, Jeffrey is there. I think he, if I'm not mistaken, he does things with the Boys and Girls Club. So I'm sure that connection with the Titans and how much they care for Jeffrey Simmons. So I'm sure that, you know, they have more than once, twice, five times, you know, have given away tickets to people at the Boys and Girls Club or some other charity or some other, you know, after school type of deal where, you know, kids are involved so they can come and, you know, enjoy a football game. It's albeit it's going to be a bad one, but, you know, I just think of me as a little kid. You know, I didn't care if the game was good or bad. I would have loved to go with my friends and just talk about the team or, you know, have popcorn or whatever. But the call is right, and I'm sure the Titans are doing what they need to do as far as that. But, yeah, you know, I would advise or I would sort of push anybody that's not going to the game, give away your tickets to people that, you know, want to go. If it's a cousin, you know, a friend down the street or to your local Boys and Girls Club or any other, you know, entity that really involves kids and get them to come.
So we were talking with Trevor Maddich about all of the buyout money there is out there. Mm-hmm. ESPN has crunched the numbers. $167.7 million is owed to FBS head coaches who have been fired after Brian Kelly is going to receive a $54 million buyout from LSU. And, Willie, you referenced a conversation on College Game Day this past weekend at Vanderbilt, which was really interesting. And then I saw this yesterday. Get a load of – this is straight out of Anchorman, this news reporter's name. Travers Mackle. Travers Mackle. He works for the NBC affiliate in New Orleans, Louisiana. Update. Multiple sources confirmed to WDSU that one private donor is expected to pay the lion's share of Brian Kelly's buyout. Also, at LSU Board of Supervisors, Chairman Scott Ballard says zero public money set aside for education, salaries, or scholarships will be used. So, reportedly, one private donor is expected to pay the lion's share of Brian Kelly's $54 million buyout.
And that was the gist of the conversation with Herbstreit, Saban, McAfee, Desmond Howard, Reese Davis. Is a coach losing a sense of who has the say? Who am I answering to? Am I answering to my athletic director? Or am I answering to dozens of people who are putting in decent amount of money? And Herbstreit made the point that it used to, and Trevor made the same point, you used to write a big check, and your name is on the new locker room, the Adam Vingan locker room.
Sounds nice.
The Vingan room.
Ooh.
Right next to the Mason Medical Center, you know,
like
or whatever,
that.
You know.
I like that.
That's what it used to be. But now it's like, hey, I'm big spender. I'm paying for that wide receiver you got. He's not getting the job done. Hey, Coach Vingan. Get my guy in there more. Don't think this isn't happening, right?
Nobody wants to be coaching
your
team.
So Nick Saban's point is, on the front end, you have to have an understanding. I need some sanity. You need to trust me. You've got to keep me insulated from some of this stuff. It's impossible to insulate yourself completely, but I think that is one of the biggest challenges, mm-hmm, of being able to keep that stuff to the outside so that you can keep your group tight. You don't have people in your locker room talking to their guy. You know, wide receiver saying, you know, I'm getting paid this and I'm not playing. I'm calling my guy. Or my guy calling me, hey, my guy hasn't paid me. I haven't played the last 3 weeks. I'm supposed to be getting paid. There's some of these things that I'm sure can easily tear apart a team without a whole lot of help, right? And the coach has very little control over some of it. But I think that's the game that you're playing right now, is trying to keep control.
Yeah, you're trying, but you've lost it. And you know, maybe one day you get it back. But, by the way, the name of that guy, which one of the Battle Royal teams would he be on Anchorman?
That's a good question. Travers Mackle?
Yeah.
Would he be on Wes Mantooth's team?
Wes Mantooth. I'm talking about my mother.
Dorothy Mantooth is a saint.
But, yeah, listen, these, and I don't know if they will ever be able to sort of and Trevor believes they will. And I'm sure, you know, they'll find a way to sort of try to corral some of the horses back in the stable. But a lot of this is just it's out there, and it's hard to try to now wrangle everybody in. Yeah, you can make little, you know, amendments to certain things and laws, but you can't stop these young men and women from making money.
No, but
that's
but,
the thing.
But isn't it a little irrational? Like, haven't we gone to a new level? Like,
oh, yeah.
The
no,
people
no,
that used
right.
to get fired in the yes. season were 1-7
exactly.
or 2-9. Not underachieving teams that were supposed to be ranked in the top 5 or top 10. That's
you're
just
right.
That didn't used to happen. Maybe at the end of the season, mm-hmm. but not mid-season.
No.
We've gone to a new level with that kind of money that you know you have to pay, and somebody just snap in their finger and say, oh, we'll pay it. No problem. 59. How much is 59?
54.
I got it. All right,
54.
Jack. Yeah.
That's under your mattress, huh?
That's it. That's insane. We've got to a new level.
615-737-1025. The Predators take on the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. 6:45 puck drop. Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan.